Okay, we'll call today's meeting together to order of the House Agricultural and Natural Resources Committee. Today is Wednesday, May the 11th. Just a little notification before we get started. Our potential work session and hearing on Senate Bill 600A will be rescheduled for a date to be determined. And with that, I'd like to open up an informational hearing on Senate Bill 766A, and I'd like to call up Paloma Sparks from Senator Byer's office, please. Yes, and we'll have our wonderful administrator give us a little background on this bill.
So, committee members, Senate Bill 766A was heard originally in the Senate Business, Transportation, and Economic Development Committee, where it came out of the committee with a 5-1 vote. It was then referred to the Ways and Means Committee and subsequently referred to the Subcommittee on Economic and Development. I believe it did have a public hearing in the Ways and Means Committee yesterday, if I'm correct. And so today it's just an informational meeting. The bill establishes the Economic Recovery Review Council as an independent council that reports directly to the governor. It authorizes the council to perform expedited site reviews for proposed industrial development projects that have state significance. I believe Paloma might be able to give you some more information on that.
Thank you. All right, please proceed.
Good afternoon, Co-Vice Chair Johnson, members of the committee. My name is Paloma Sparks. I'm the Senior Policy Advisor for Senator Lee Byer. We began working on Senate Bill 766 probably back last November. Representatives Clem and Gilliam and Senator Chris Edwards had got a work group together to see what could be done, one, to make the land use system work better for business, and also to see if there was a way that we could improve the system so we could get make it easier to create jobs and make it easier for businesses that we're citing here. So that were a smaller work group was developed out of that very large work group, and 766 is what we came up with. The idea is that when we've got a potential project that's going to bring in good-paying jobs, that we make sure that the process moves as quickly and smoothly as possible. So to get everybody sitting at the same table, talking about all the issues, making sure that, you know, DSL is talking to DEQ, and that the local government is dealing with all of the issues in concert with the state government agencies. So that's what we envisioned, and also that's sort of the first part is about projects of statewide significance. Second part of the bill is about regionally significant industrial areas. So the intent there is to ensure that industrial areas, that areas that are already planned and zoned for industrial use, are maintained for that use, and that regulations that might impact their employment capacity are limited. So that's sort of a general overview. I hadn't planned to testify today, so I'm not as in-depth prepared, but I'm happy to answer questions.
Well, that sounds like a good overview. Rep. Escobar.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we not have an inventory, I believe, of our industrial sites and abandoned industrial sites done by Kulongowski administration?
Shovel-ready
lands. Why don't we take those particular sites plus what we have on the table in front of us and set up a grant program where we can go ahead, get all the hoops jumped through that we create and bog down the permit process for the owner of the land, and when the owner of the land either leases and or sells that property, then it's paid back with interest to the state of Oregon as an economic development tool. So that way, when a company comes in, instead of waiting 2 years to get a year or two to get a permit process, they can go right to the line, get their permit, and be out. And we can do it in a week instead of 2 years.
Yeah, so you probably want Director Whitman to handle that question.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Richard, how are you?
Well, and before we do that, let me back up just one second. Sorry I was late. I was trying to negotiate some things on 600 here. But so this, I don't know what intro you gave about the interim committee process.
I talked about your interim work group.
So there was a work group, tons of people, 40, well, you know, a lot of people, 40 people around the table coming up with ideas like yours, and there were like 35 of them that people had, and we came down to 8 or 10 or 12 that were sort of in the ballpark of, you know, maybe you could find some consensus around. Then we went into smaller groups. Senator Edwards was the chair of it. I went to China. Senator Beyer got elected. Representative Gilliam was the other chair of it with Senator Edwards. He came to the meeting a few times. It was pretty impressive. And and then we had Senator Beyer convene a smaller subgroup to try and hammer out details because it was just far too large of a group to do micro-level details. And so this is the work product of what survived all that. So because we've never going to see the product of our Ag Interim Committee work group as a bill because it went to Ways and Means and it'll go straight out to the floor, unless we insisted the bill came here, I was hoping we could just do it like this and not have to delay the bill's passage by having it have to come back to this committee to answer questions when we could do it in this format. So that's why we're doing this today. Because it is, there's some people who don't like the bill, but I like it, and so I wanted to have it explained because I'm still hoping it'll pass. And with that, Director Whitman, any other questions besides technical, very difficult ones to hammer poor Senator Beyer's staff with, Representative Escobar? Anything easy, softballs of any kind?
I just wanted to thank her for doing a great job on a short notice, so good for thinking on your feet.
Thank you. I'll be back there if anybody needs me.
Great.
Happy to come back up.
Okay. I've heard that you had something to do with helping construct the bill. I'm not saying you're in favor of it or not, where the governor's at on the current version or not, but can you at least tell us all about it and what you can tell us about the governor's position, if any?
Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, Richard Whitman, the governor's natural resource advisor. At the time I started working on this, I was the director of DLCD, and obviously my role has shifted. So first of all, my apologies for being a little bit late, and I would concur, even though I didn't see all of her performance, the fact that Paloma had to do that on one-minute notice is impressive. She has been working on this as staff for Senator Beyer throughout the process on this. So I don't want to repeat what she just went through, but I do want to hit just a couple of high points in terms of what's in the bill and also address very briefly some of the concerns that we've heard about the bill over the last several weeks, and then I'd be happy to take any questions you might have about the legislation. So the bill does have two main parts. The first part is a tool for primarily for Business Oregon, but for others interested in economic development in the state of Oregon to use in attracting major new industrial operations to the state or expansions of existing industrial operations. It's not something new, untried. It is a tool that the design of which is based on a very similar program that exists in the state of Washington that they've used there for a while. So we drew the concepts from that, and that's the projects of state significance, and the concept is to pull all the work that is needed to get to a yes or no answer about whether a particular industrial use is going to be allowed in terms of land use, also in terms of other state permits, in a very short period of time, 120 days, and to get answers on all of those permits. The entry into that is only for up to 10 projects. So this is in some ways, an experiment. We've put this together at a time when obviously we have a very high unemployment rate in the state of Oregon, and so it's focused on really trying to get some jobs on the ground very quickly. Local government does have a continuing role in this, and that's been one of the concerns that we've heard over the last several weeks, is concerns from local government about whether this somehow takes away authority from them. These projects can come into this process, and this is voluntary on the part of the project developer. If they want to come into it, they have to get the sign-off from local government before they can enter into this process. That's a precondition to coming into it. Doesn't mean that local government has to make a land use decision. In fact, we specifically said it's not that, so it's not appealable. But they need that political support from local government in order to come into this process. And obviously, that's a practical matter. If you're going to have a big employer come into an area, we all know it's not going to, you know, there are going to be problems unless there's solid political support behind that project. So that is a precondition to coming in. Another piece of this is not about planning and zoning new lands for industrial development. This is about taking areas that our communities have already decided are appropriate for industrial use, already planned and zoned for industrial use, and allowing these major projects to go through the permitting process, not the planning process, very quickly. So hence the support from a fairly broad coalition. This is about making our land use system work the way I think a broad spectrum of people have intended it to work. Let the planning, you know, the planning decisions can be made with broader public input, go through planning commission, go through city council, go through county board of commissioners. But once we've decided that an area is appropriate for industrial development, let's not come back and revisit that decision over and over again. If we've got something that fits within the parameters, particularly if it's going to bring a lot of jobs to our communities, let's get that decided. Let's get that through the permitting process quickly. So that's the first part of the bill. The second part of the bill is focused on it's focused on regionally significant industrial areas. These are areas which, again, our local governments have already decided as a planning matter are appropriate for industrial use, so we're not talking about new lands for industrial development. We're talking about lands that have been planned for industrial development and where those areas have significant competitive advantages for job growth as a result, usually, of infrastructure investments that have been made, again, by our local governments in terms of roads or sewer or water, or by state government in terms of state highway infrastructure or state funding for infrastructure. This is about protecting those areas, making sure that they are actually used for job creation, for high-paying jobs that we all want to see in our communities. And it's sending a signal to the market that these are areas where, on a going-forward basis also, we want our local governments and our state governments to focus resources on infrastructure, job training, that sort of thing in these areas to really promote job growth. So that's the second part of the bill, the regionally significant industrial areas. It does place some limitations on local government in terms of their ability to change those planning designations to allow a residential use to come in that would create conflicts, or a retail use that would come in and create conflicts for those types of jobs that we're seeking to have occur there. The other part of that, second part of the bill, is it would allow, it does not mandate, but again, permissive, it allows the property owner, if they want, to take their projects through an expedited local land use process to get to a yes or no answer more quickly, and to get some regulatory certainty on the land use side more quickly. So those are the two main parts of the bill. This does not solve all our land use problems. It does not solve all our job creation problems. It is a, somebody said to me in the last week, it's a solid single or double. It's not the home run in terms of doing everything that everybody wants, but it's something that we can get consensus around right now in terms of a solid, good step forward in terms of promoting job creation. I want to speak briefly to the governor's office position on this bill. The governor is supportive of this legislation. The governor also wants to continue to work with the folks who have been participating in this effort and others on legislative efforts to make sure that as a state we are doing what we can within the values of our system to promote job creation in the state of Oregon. And that's a commitment that he has to continue to work on these issues with some of the partners that we've had in this effort. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have about this bill.
Okay, I just wanted to welcome the work group member, Representative Goffler, over there. And do you want to walk us through line by line this bill? Because I'm sure you've tracked it since you last saw it in November and explain each sentence.
I need to listen a lot more, Mr. Chair, but thank you for welcoming me. Exactly.
I would like to put that on the record. He said he'd like to listen a lot more.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Representative Shilliam. Representative Esquivel, did you have something for...
Actually,
not the director anymore.
So
what is your title now? Advisor?
We're talking, Richard, we're talking about general industrial, heavy industrial, kind of like that. We're not talking about like a light industrial with a retail sprinkling. We're just basically into heavy and general. Is that correct?
Chair Clem, Representative Esquivel, we are talking about industrial jobs, not necessarily heavy industrial. We're also talking about traded sector services. So this could include research and development as well as your traditional industrial. But we are not talking about retail. We're not talking about wholesale. We're not talking, obviously, about residential. It's about industrial jobs and traded sector services. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is we're interested in particular in promoting job growth in industries where we're going to be bringing new dollars into our state and into our communities, industries where the goods or services that are being produced are primarily things that are going to export either overseas or to other states that are going to be bringing new dollars into Oregon. That's where we can get the most bang for our buck in terms of job creation, and that's why we have the focus on that here in this bill.
Follow up.
What I was discussing prior to you setting down was we should, in my opinion, on these sites have set up through economic development some sort of a grant program where you can go out, you can get everything done on this piece of property to the landowner that owns the property, and when they lease it and or sell it, then it's paid back through the sale or the lease of the property. But that way what you have is you have a piece of property that's ready to go, that's had all the hurdles jumped over, and it expedites it. Because one of our most difficult things that I've found when it comes to economic development, when it comes to siting of manufacturing facilities, is the time frame it takes for them to get a permit and get a shovel in the ground and start working on it, and it's such a time-consuming effort.
Chair Clem, Representative Esquivel, good points, and gives me an opportunity to talk about a couple of other programs that exist out there that complement this. Again, this is only one tool in our toolbox of how to try to create some new jobs in the state of Oregon. As I think you're aware, Business Oregon also has the Certified Industrial Site Program, and that program is focused on creating an inventory, a good inventory of industrial lands where you can turn a shovel to start building within 180 days. So they have been through enough of the permitting process so that they can say that If you come in and you're interested in locating your company here or expanding your company here, we can commit to getting you in the ground within 180 days. Business Oregon, along with Department of Transportation and Department of Land Conservation and Development, are working on some modifications to that to also allow properties to come into that program that are a little bit more complicated in terms of some of the permitting issues. Because what we found is we've sort of worked through many of the properties that are what we call the low-hanging fruit that are fairly easy to get through permitting. And we're now starting to run into property sites that are that have more difficult permitting issues. But we also want to encourage those landowners to do exactly what you were talking about in terms of getting some of the upfront work done so that we can then help market those as places for people to come and do business. So we're working on some modifications to that program also to open it up a little bit more broadly.
Other questions? I know Richard's got about 1 minute before you got to be somewhere else, I think.
Actually, I'm okay. Thank you, Representative.
Anything else for – we've got several other folks coming up, too, so.
Okay. Give me a phone call.
Yes.
He's busy, it turns out. His new job. How do you like your new job?
It's great.
All right.
It's wonderful.
All right. Yep.
Wish I'd all leave.
Let's see, John. We're just going to do one at a time. Is that how we're doing this? Do you care? John Chandler, Tom Gallagher, and Alana. Is Alana here? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why don't you all three come up? You know who we want to hear from
apparently
first.
Apparently the general consensus is that I'm going first.
Well, that's our preference, too. These two are characters.
I know I won't be nearly as entertaining. For the record, Ilana Guinea with the Oregon AFL-CIO representing 225,000 Oregonians. And when we joined this work group, we had a few goals in mind. We wanted to work on ways to improve our ability to expand our manufacturing base in Oregon. We wanted to create the certainty that many large manufacturing employers require to move to the state. And we wanted to start a conversation about how we can do industrial development better in the state of Oregon, because I think that's a conversation that has really, I don't want to say been lacking in recent years, because I know a lot of people have been trying to address this, but that hasn't moved as far along as we'd like to have seen it before this year. And we got involved with those principles in mind. I don't need to tell any of you that we need jobs in Oregon, and I don't need to tell any of you that those should be high-wage jobs that create the foundation of a strong economy. But those were goals, of course, as well for us coming into this. I've had a few people ask me since then why we consider this a jobs bill, since it doesn't do direct job creation. And I think it's crucial that as we create a package of jobs bills, we include legislation that makes it easier to create good jobs. And that's where this bill comes into play. We really believe that this is a step down the road of making it easier to bring in the jobs that will sustain our economy. I want to touch on a few things where I think the intent is maybe not as clear in the bill as it should be. I think one of them was raised already with the representative's question earlier about whether or not this was for all manufacturing jobs, heavy industrial jobs, or something broader. The definition in the bill of traded sector is relatively broad so that we could encompass everything that the members of the work group wanted to see in the bill. There was a lot of discussion about that definition, and I think that as we implement this bill, everybody has in mind that those be the high-wage jobs, whether it be heavy industrial, manufacturing, or R&D, that they be those high-wage jobs that will really help move our economy along, and not some of the lower-wage jobs that could be included, the things that maybe could be included in that definition on a technicality but don't represent the type of development that we're really reaching for with this.
And I've said many times high-wage jobs, and that's something that isn't necessarily reflected in the bill, but that's something that we talked about a lot as well, and that's really important, is that as we're talking about job creation and looking at this bill as a job creation tool, we really use it to create the type of jobs that our economy needs right now. I don't want to go on for too long about this. I know there are a lot of other people, but we appreciate having been involved in this process. We look forward to working with these partners in the future and really making sure that Oregon is a place that has good jobs, where people want to be living not just for the quality of life, but also for the work opportunities, and that we're helping bring good businesses to the state.
You notice that about half the work group got hired by the governor sometime in the middle of it? Just FYI, I was just thinking about that. I like you better than Duke anyway, but...
I appreciate that, and it's interesting testifying on coming into the work group, not having been the person at the table through any of the work group process
before
session.
Make sure you tell Duke I like you better than him, please.
I think it's on the record. We could have him watch the video now.
Mm. Yeah, he made me put up all the lawn signs in 94. I'm still mad at him about it. Mr. Chair, back the gavel's back in your able hands if we've got two people to keep talking on this panel.
Did I make it in time for Mr. Chandler, too?
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, yes.
No. Who's next?
Mitch, co-chair, members of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association. And before I get to the more substantive part, I thought I ought to explain, as I did on the Senate side, why the home builders are involved in industrial lands bill. In part, that's because many years of doing the baton death march to the Oregon's land use system on my part, of trying to make the system work the way we thought it should. The other is, quite frankly, one of economics. Our industry is hurting very badly, as you all know. One of the reasons that it's hurting is there aren't enough people in Oregon with jobs to be able to buy the homes that we're building. And there's a direct, if somewhat attenuated, connection between, from the home builder's perspective, not being entirely parochial, that if we had more jobs, if more Oregonians were working, we'd be able to sell more product. That'd make our industry better, that'd make the state stronger. And I think one of the things that came out of this work group that I would call to your attention is not just the labor and management, so to speak, that you see sitting in front of you, but also various sectors of Oregon's economy coming together to focus on this one particular issue of industrial lands and industrial jobs, but taking that as a broad, in a more metaphorical sense, of the need for Oregon to figure out what it wants to be when it grows up. We don't really have a good business plan for this state. We're creating it. And I think the Oregon Business Council's involvement has been very powerful there. I think what you're seeing this session with Governor Kitzhaber's work will bear fruit going forward of trying to create an Oregon that we know our kids can stay in and not have to leave the state to get better paying jobs, where we see our higher education system supported the way it ought to be. And all the other pieces, this bill actually addresses one very critical component, which is a need, as we've done away with the timber industry, willingly or unwillingly, to replace those family wage jobs that we used to have in every town in Oregon in some other more thoughtful, organized fashion. This bill won't do that, but it's a step towards that objective of not raising all of our kids to be baristas at some food cart in Portland. There are two things about this bill I want to flag for this committee, though, that I think are going to be conversations going forward, some of which we started during the interim. With regard to the land use system generally, and co-chair Clem and I've had a number of conversations about this over the years, we have a system in Oregon of land use planning, comprehensive statewide land use planning. Every city in the state has rural boundaries. All of that has been going on for 30-some-odd years. What we really haven't done a very good job about, and what this bill is getting at, again, with the narrow focus of industrial lands, is trying to make sure that the lands that we planned and zoned inside of those urban growth boundaries are actually used for the purposes to which they were zoned. And what we've done too many times in the past is said we are going to color things on a map and we're going to adopt our plans, and we walk away having thought we actually accomplished something. The objective of this bill is to say if there's good industrial land, let's make sure it is used as good industrial land and not turned into houses or Walmarts or 7-Elevens or golf courses or anything else, but that is the land we said as a community we're going to use. That means that planning has to actually turn into implementation, has to turn into a product at the end of the day, and if it does not, our hope is that this body and our local government partners will be able to go back in and adjust the plans. If the wrong land is zoned industrial because there's no use it's ever going to locate on a particular site, then let's quit pretending and let's go find some other land that can be used for those industrial purposes. That same logic, by the way, would apply to commercial uses, would apply to residential uses, and frankly, I think it's the next iteration in terms of Oregon's land use system system. If we're going to have it, it needs to work. It can't just be a planning exercise. It has to be planning, followed by performance, followed by more planning, followed by more performance. That's one big point I wanted to leave with you today. The second point that this bill hints at is one of local control versus state interest. And on the rural side of the urban growth boundary, we have had no problem in the state telling rural Oregonians and rural counties, rural communities, that their local politics, their local needs, their local perceptions of their needs, in many cases, don't count as much as the state's interest in preserving farm and forest land, preserving open space, and those are key industries, and we ought to be preserving them. What I think this bill talks about, and again, it just kind of nibbles around the edges, but it's going to be an important discussion in the future, is at what point do we tell urban Oregon the same thing, that local politics and local needs and desires may lose out to the overarching needs of the state in terms of job creation, in terms of economic development? That's a very difficult political conversation. My personal opinion is we regulated rural Oregon with a fair degree of political impunity because there ain't many folks in rural Oregon, because if there's many folks, it wouldn't be rural any longer. So from a political standpoint, it can be simple to do. Going after urban Oregon and telling them the cities basically the same thing that we told the counties for many years is a more difficult task. Having said that, I think it's a critical one, because if we're going to have a planning-based system, it has to work. It has to work across the board. It has to be fair across the board, and it has to be, the issues of the state have to be clearly articulated, and when they run up against interests of a local government, there has to be a process by which to talk that through, and in some cases, make a decision as a state to make those lands appropriate. And what I'm referring to here is a tendency of local politics in terms of overlay zoning, environmental zoning, setbacks, stream sides, what have you, to make it difficult to implement the plans that we've come up with. And that relates to my first point, obviously, about making sure the plans can actually be performed. We support, the Oregon Home Builders have supported the Oregon Land Use Funding System. We continue to. We would like to see it function more efficiently and better. We think this bill will get there. And it is a shame we won't have the substantive conversations in the committees this session on the House side, but I suspect we'll have plenty of time in the future to get back to this topic. Be glad to take questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Is it Mary? Tom?
Yeah, Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, Tom Gallagher, representing the Portland Business Alliance. I think it's interesting, as I sit here and listen, you heard Richard talk about the bill, and the rest of us are talking about not quite exactly the bill, but the bigger issues. And I guess I'm going to continue to do that. We support this bill as it's written. It is clearly a start. It is clearly looking at a difficult situation, industrial lands, jobs, and it is not pushing the ball very hard, but it is raising the issue. And John raised the point of planning and then the point of actual building, constructing, putting the jobs in place. This is what we're talking about. We're trying to focus a little bit more as we go forward on this bill on actually getting something sited, getting something built, getting somebody employed. A number of people will say when they ask, what's the matter with Oregon, what's the matter with the Oregon economy, over time three issues have come up, and they're all three sacred cows, sacred political cows, and they need to be dealt with very, very intelligently. The first one is the land use system. The second one is the regulatory permitting system. How many times have you heard people talk about one-stop permitting and streamlining agency regulations, but you've never seen a real bill that did it? The third one is infrastructure. And I think Representative Escobar was talking about the fact that our permitting process, our land use process, and our other processes require quite a bit of upfront money. When somebody is actually going to take a piece of raw land, regardless of how it's zoned, and move it forward so that it gets to another nice term, shovel-ready, there's a great deal of expense. And I sit on a planning commission, and I watch a process where a landowner gets a piece of land that's moved in into the urban growth boundary, the development begins to move out toward, and the first thing they do is change the comp plan or the zoning of that land to fit where they want to go. And then a developer buys the land from the landowner, and the developer looks around for an actual builder or some user of the land, and they put together the rest of the plan, and they do the rest of the improvements, the roads, the streets, the other that's necessary, and that's ultimately paid for by the applicant who actually uses the land. That can be a long and difficult process. this bill starts to talk about the land use system. It starts to talk about on industrial side. Let me interrupt myself here for a little bit of a second to say, and again, Representative Escobar, I'm sure, sat on a planning commission, the city council, understands that if you go down and look at zoning in most local jurisdictions for industrial, it runs the gamut from somebody who can build a steel mill to put a dog washing operation on some forms of industrial land. We have mixed use development. We have light industrial. We have certain kinds of development which nobody really wants to be next to because it emits noise and traffic and so forth. We really don't have a good definition of what's industrial. There's another bill that's floating through the system that's not quite rising to the level of this one, but you really all ought to take a look at it, and that's the bill that came out of Ben, 792. 792 is a beautiful concept that's being developed in Central Oregon, where they look at putting land use, economic development, and local infrastructure planning together, not in three separate silos and not disconnected, but putting them closer together through intergovernmental agreements. In this bill, we're talking about land that's already zoned industrial, and that's a key. We're not talking about bringing in new land. We're not talking about going outside the urban growth boundary. Those are much more difficult conversations. They may or may not arise in the future as we work on this, but those things that we haven't approached here. The Bend bill, which is in Senate rules right now, does have a real concept of putting together the infrastructure piece, whether it's loans and grants or what you do with your local highway dollars. It also doesn't use the term industrial. It uses the term employment land. And I think that's something Amanda talked about here. When you're looking at your local communities and you're putting your economic development plan together, it may not call for a steel manufacturing job or a heavy industrial job. It may be distribution. It may be but we still want to stay with high-wage jobs. We don't want the low-wage jobs. But some distribution plans and you know, call centers aren't quite that good of wages and so forth. But we're looking at local governments that can develop all of those different kinds of things. And industrial may not fit that. These may not be trade sector industrial. This bill, and I'm happy with the bill the way it is, just starts that discussion of what is high employment land, what is valuable land and valuable jobs for your individual communities around the state. What fits in Portland may not fit in Hood River. It may not fit in Newport. What jobs you can attract there, the kinds of businesses you can get there, how you build your economic development structure is going to be different from across the state. So let me end by saying that the reason we support this bill and support it very strongly is because it is a beginning. And if it's viewed as anything other than a beginning, then don't pass the bill out of Ways and Means, because it wouldn't be a very good bill if it wasn't opening the door for the discussions we need to have in the future.
Question? Representative Schaffler down here.
Chillian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is what happens when you leave for a few minutes. I'm sorry.
You went up the end, Elizabeth.
But your very generous co-chair and your committee administrator invited me. So if I can just make a comment and a quick question. Mr. Chandler, I think, I'm not a member of the committee, but I think it's our prerogative to ask questions. But you ask a question, when is our urban areas of Oregon going to realize that local control may be come a little lesser important at times than the greater good? Did you really want an answer to that?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Gilliam, absolutely not.
Thank you.
That probably takes more time than we have in this proceeding, but I think it is an important discussion to have at another time, at your convenience.
Right. John's not incredibly quick-witted. What he meant to say is it depends on the answer.
Yeah.
I agree with
you. It depends on the answer.
Thank you. Okay. Other questions?
Have you spoken?
Yes. I've testified before you came in. I'm sure Representative Clem can fill you in on the details.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Because I have a couple.
And then we have Mary McCurdy. Kylie McCurdy and Jeremy Rogers.
11.
Good afternoon, Chair Jensen, Chair Klein, members of the committee. Mary Kyle McCurdy, representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon. 1,000 Friends of Oregon supports this bill, and we served on the various committees that Paloma and Representative Klem described to you earlier. And we support it because it supports the bill, supports compact urban growth boundaries, it protects the integrity of the land use planning process, and it promotes efficient and better use of existing infrastructure. And I will attempt to answer your question, Representative Gilliam, when I get to that. And we think it does this by focusing, and I'm focusing on the second part of the bill dealing with regionally significant industrial areas. We think that portion of the bill accomplishes these by focusing on lands that are already planned and zoned for industrial use by their local communities. And they already have irreplaceable and significant infrastructure investments in things like roads, rails, interchanges, et cetera. Those are public investments, often at the state level that investment has come. And that's where I think there is a state role and an interest in how those lands are used over the long term, and it's not just a local interest. For those lands that are regionally significant and have those essentially irreplaceable infrastructure investments, the bill restricts conversion to non-industrial uses. It restricts incursion and interference by non-industrial uses. And while the bill does allow new environmental or development standards to be adopted by local government, if they have the effect of reducing the industrial capacity of those lands, the local government must look to other actions to increase the efficiency of those lands, including things like relaxing other development standards, relaxing parking requirements, increasing height limitations, that sort of thing, or by cleaning up brownfields or making additional investments in infrastructure that allow those existing industrial lands to be continue to be used. We believe that this will keep industrial lands near where people already live, and it will protect our existing infrastructure investments. The biggest hurdle we hear to making industrial lands real is their lack of infrastructure. And, you know, frankly, we can add a lot of land to urban growth boundaries, but we don't have the money in this state, and I don't. And this is not an issue of this economy, I don't think. I don't think we're ever going to have the kind of money in the state to provide the kinds of infrastructure that we have already in many of our cities that are in serving lands that are already zoned for industrial use. So we should protect those lands and those investments. So we think this is smart planning and smart investment. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Jensen, Co-Chair Klem, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before you today. For the record, my name is Jeremy Rogers. I'm with the Oregon Business Council, and I'm the project manager for the Oregon Business Plan, which is a collaborative effort between several business groups, including OBC, Associated Oregon Industries, the Oregon Business Association, the Portland Business Alliance, and others to develop an economic strategy to help grow jobs and raise incomes in the state of Oregon. We, through the business plan, support Senate Bill 7766, and want to just tell you a little bit more about our perspective on the bill and why we're supporting it. We conducted about 19 regional meetings last year asking the question, what can Oregon do to facilitate more high-wage job creation? And it's jobs, and it's not just jobs, but it's high-wage jobs. We've been doing economic research that shows that even when Oregon's job base is growing, our per capita income has been declining precipitously for the last decade, and it's about 90% of the U.S. average. So we've got a problem not just with jobs, but with not having enough high-wage jobs. And we asked, we had 19 regional meetings with economic development and business leaders around the state and asked what could Oregon do to improve our prospects for more high-wage jobs during the hopefully coming recovery. The issues of permitting and speeding up and streamlining permitting processes and ensuring that we have an adequate supply of in large industrial land were two issues that came up frequently in those meetings, particularly in the Willamette Valley, the Portland area, Central Oregon, the Columbia Gorge, some areas of the coast. And we brought some stakeholders together to look at what we could do to improve those situations. And that happened about the same time that the interim working group had formed coming out of this committee, and we appreciate the leadership, the early leadership that was shown. We submitted a list of issues to that group that we thought needed to be addressed in to kind of fully improve the industrial lands and permitting situation. That list included a lot of different issues, including a more strategic process for identifying and linking our industrial land supply needs with our economic development strategies and with infrastructure planning, ensuring that we have a 5-year rolling supply of shovel-ready land rather than just 20-year supply, that we protect the prime industrial land that we already have from unnecessary restrictions, environmental overlays, or conversion to other uses, that we do something to streamline the permitting and appeals process for industrial projects, that we look at ways to amend the transportation planning rule, and that we develop better mechanisms to clean up, to aggregate, and supply infrastructure to industrial lands. That's a big list of issues. We recognize it's going to take many, many years to address all of them, but we believe that 766 is a very good attempt to start addressing at least two and starting to get at three of those issues. 766 creates the expedited permitting an appeals process for industrial projects. That's the first part of the bill. We think that can have an important impact on the permitting issues. And then the second part of the bill that designates the regionally significant industrial areas gets at the issue of protecting the good prime industrial land we do have from conversion or other overlays and restrictions. And then there's a piece of the bill that also suggests that the Transportation Commission and the Infrastructure Finance Authority can use the RSIA designation as a means for prioritizing infrastructure investments. We think that's positive as well. We would like to note that in addition to this bill, we still believe there's a lot of work that needs to be done on those other issues, and that's going to require some tough conversations about UGB, about how we, as Mary Kyle said, how we really finance infrastructure, and that those are tough conversations to have. But we think this bill gets us started, that the partnerships that are being created between the business community, the labor community, Thousand Friends, the governor's office, the legislature, is very positive, and it's a lot to build off of. And we are going to continue to push hard for this bill and appreciate the opportunity to tell you about our support. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. Questions?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned UGB, and I think that's an interesting topic. And I don't know whether this is something that came up before the work group or not, but if you've got a municipality that currently doesn't have an inventory of developable land that would fit the needs to be able to be to attract industry or whatever, but yet they would be very amenable to expanding their UGB to bring additional industrial lands into their municipality and so forth, and then can has good access to infrastructure, all that kind of stuff, transportation. Was it talked about at all in your experience, or whether that would be something that would be potentially could be encouraged or could be enabled by this? And I guess I would be interested to hear Thousand Friends' perspective on this too, in terms of any kind of UGB expansion that could affect potentially available industrial land.
Chairs Clemon, Jensen, Representative Johnson. The work group was focused on how to make it easier to do industrial development on lands already zoned for industrial use inside urban growth boundaries, but actually this bill could apply to industrial lands that are currently outside of urban growth boundaries, and there are some. So it's, but essentially it's focused on how to make it easier to develop lands that are already zoned for industrial use by their local community. So we thought that was a big enough piece to bite off, and we did not address the issue of urban growth boundaries. And the current land use planning process, and maybe this is a longer conversation that you and I can have, it says that if a city has a need for urban growth boundaries are supposed to contain a 20-year land supply for all urban uses, industrial, residential, civic, et cetera. And if a municipality doesn't have a 20-year land supply for employment uses, I mean, it's a broad employment category, and they examine however that works for them, they are supposed to increase their capacity, and they have the option of adding land to do that. Now, that's a simple, brief description, and I understand there's challenges in that, including that adding land is only the beginning of the question. It's the issue of infrastructure. So there are cities with a fair amount of industrial land but don't have the infrastructure serving it, which when you said developable, I wasn't quite sure what was behind that. I'm not sure I've answered your question, since that's how the current land use planning program is currently set up, and obviously there's some example that you're thinking of that isn't working, and
well,
I'd be happy
yeah,
to just talk about that.
In many areas of rural Oregon, where of course you've got EFU land that comes right up next to, you know, city limits, if you will, or to the UGB and so forth, and then cities that want to, you know, need to, you know, find some expansion, run up against all kinds of roadblocks when they try to do that with our land use system in Oregon and so forth. So, again, it's one of those, I think it was referenced earlier, Rep. Gilliam may have brought up this point about the, you know, the urban-rural issues, and there can be some different perspectives between the existing, you know, industrial or metropolitan areas, but what, you know, rural Oregon really wants, they want jobs, they want industry and so forth, but they find themselves hemmed in, if you will, by many different forces. So, again, you and I could have this discussion at another time, but it's larger than the framework that we're discussing here. Thank you.
Other questions? Seeing none, we have gone through our agenda, and there's nothing further for the good of the order. You just couldn't get out of here, could you?
I got to go.
Just the devil made you do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for letting me come into this part of it. This isn't a question,
could
but it's
we
just,
bring him back?
To me, part of this is a tribute to co-governance, but yet part of it is just a tribute to if people of goodwill will sit down and work on something. This may not be the biggest bill we've ever done, but this is a great example from my perspective of people from all interests putting Oregon first and trying to put people to work. I was a very small part of the task force, but I'm grateful to you and especially grateful to your co-chair for bringing this thing forward on the House side.
Thank you, Representative.
It was a huge part of the task force.
I do very much appreciate the... It's amazing how you can get very, very close if you can get people to sit down and talk to each other without a great deal of bias and you know, have value positions, advance agendas, but be open to listen to other people. And, you know, sometimes you actually wind up with some pretty good product.
Amen.
Hey, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
I just wanted to take this opportunity to announce publicly that Representative Gilliam and I have successfully gotten into both redistricting plans. One district, a provision that we don't have to run for office anymore either, and we'll both represent that one district. It'll have two districts worth of population like a senator would, and we'll just have it for life. It's in there if you'd want to take a look at that plan and bill. Both bills, R's and D's. Everyone signed off on it so
It's far. Good news for us, bad news for the constituents.
I would think if we could put both of you in the same district,
get rid of one of us,
might be a great idea.
Oh my lord!
Mine doesn't make
sense. Our map is fine.
Before we deteriorate any further,
they leave Greg.